I heard about this model. I go, hey, this is interesting. Let me try this out. Let's see what happens. And I liked it because it was much more scalable than signing a 12-month contract with Zillow. I said, let me try this out because I can try this for 90 days and see what happens.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. This is Javier Hinojo, your host of the Naked Truth about Real Estate Investing. And today I have Gus Castro on the show. He has a large inside sales company. Basically, what they do is they blow up your phone all day and make you money. I mean, I don't know what other way to put it, right?
That's a good description.
Blow up your phone and
then
make people money, right?
Yeah.
And exactly. Or they piss people off. Either way.
Both, there, man. Why not both?
You don't piss people off. You make a lot of money.
Oh yeah, exactly. For sure. I mean, people that get the calls. People that get the calls, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. I piss people off. Oh, my camera went off. There we go. We'll come back on. But anyways, he's in Michoacán, Mexico. He's from San Diego, lives in San Diego and travels back and forth. So I appreciate you being on the show. So today we're going to talk a little bit about your business, some investors doing it on their own. Like, I know you have some tips. People can do it on their own. What's the pros? What's the cons? And we'll just see where it goes. So first, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, Gus, you know, originally from Mexico, I grew up on the border with California. It's kind of an interesting place if you know the area, you know, because I have one foot in Mexico and one foot in California in the U.S. So I kind of grew up in that kind of environment. A funny story, as a kid in the 80s in Mexico, I only got U.S. channels over the air in my home, right? I had one like crappy Mexican channel that I could barely see. And I had all of the San Diego, you know, network channels I could see all day, right? So I'm like, hey, let's check this out, bro. And I love the culture, man. I got it. I received it. I had a lot of family living in Southern California. And all my cousins would always make fun of me if I spoke English with an accent. So that was kind of like, you know, that I was brought up in that kind of environment. I went to school in Mexico. I got recruited to go to the U.S. I got hired by Microsoft back in, as a while ago, 2004, for the folks that think that's a long time ago. And I went to live in Seattle. In my mind, in my world, I had made it.
Yeah, because you have a degree, an engineer degree, right? Engineer?
Yeah, I'm an engineer by training. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I jumped into high-tech software. If people don't remember this, in 2004, Microsoft was the company in technology. It was like Google and Amazon and Apple and Facebook all put together, right? It was, everything was Microsoft. The PlayStation, the browser, the PC, the Windows Mobile, Windows Pocket PCs. Microsoft was everything, right? So it was pretty
awesome. Windows Mobile. What happened to that thing? I used to have that. I remember that.
I was there and it died a pretty horrible death after the iPhone came out. It was pretty brutal, actually. At the time, it was like, wow, man, I made it to the big leagues. I was a minor celebrity in my hometown because, like, hey, man, I went to give a talk at my high school. It was crazy, man. It was, a huge opportunity. And I went to Microsoft, lived there. My wife moved up there with me. I got married up there. And it was great. It was a dream job, a dream situation for a kid growing up on the border. You know, I wasn't poor. But, you know, I was not rich even by Mexican standards, right? We were doing well. My parents, you know, both were educated, so we did well. But it was like nothing like in the U.S., right? It was like, wow, man, made it. I made it. The problem was, Javier, that it was a dream job, but it wasn't my dream, right? Yeah. I am, for the people out there that know me now, I am an okay technology guy, right? I am not a hardcore developer, programmer, at the level that to really, really enjoy it. And I had an okay career at Microsoft. Okay. I became a manager there. I was there for 10 years. This was not an overnight realization for me because the energy you get, the fame that my parents were through, like on the moon, like, wow, this is amazing. You've made it. You're good. And then I realized that this wasn't for me, bro. This was just not my thing. I had other skills. I was good at networking and talking to people and getting things going. I built a nonprofit and raised $300,000 from my college back in Mexico to give scholarships to people because I was a scholarship recipient. And I did a bunch of these little things on the side, right? And I'm like, man, there's something else. I'm meant to do something else because I was okay at Microsoft, But I could see the ceiling for me. I personally go, yeah, the guys that are above that ceiling, I'm not like those guys. I could tell like that's not me. That's not me. And so my wife got into real estate. My wife started this in 2008 as the world was ending. For most folks that don't remember this, the world was about to end in 2008. We weren't sure it was going to happen. And she became the rookie of the year by selling like 9 deals that year. It was like amazing, right? And she got into the business during this turmoil, right? As the market shifted from the hottest seller's market on record, note to the wise, this was a thing. It shifted across, it took about a year to really turn into a true buyer's market. And it was crazy, man. It was, investors were there, REOs and foreclosures. And, you know, it was insanity. And I got to see it pretty much up front with her and her business. And I got really excited about that, right? I got really interested in what she was doing. I became her assistant, her marketing guy, her transaction coordinator, did all the IT guy, right? For her job, her business.
Sure.
And I got licensed in 2010 as a real estate agent as I was working at Microsoft, full-time at Microsoft. And I would do nights and weekends with her, working with her, doing deals, everything, right? And at 2013, I said, you know, screw it. Life is too short, right? A lot of things happen. In summary, I realized, man, if I'm going to do something, it has to be now, right? I was 32 at the time, and I jumped in to become an entrepreneur. It's kind of crazy. And I said, I'm going to give myself 6 months of runway, right? I had money saved up. I had the Microsoft house, Microsoft car. I moved into a one-bedroom apartment, and I'm like, I'm going to give myself 6 months. Maybe even, I had money for a year. I said, I'm going to give myself 6 months.
So did you guys have kids at this time? Do you guys have kids or no kids?
No kids. Okay. And that was a huge help, man. I'm going to be really honest with you. That was a huge, because I'm a very risk-averse person. Like in my core, I'm conservative, right? So I'm like, yeah. So for me, it was unbelievably risky to do this. No kids, right? Just me and my wife and I. And my wife was super gung-ho. I cannot tell you how happy she was.
So she was like ready to go. And you were, because tell me about that process, right? You kind of like, folk hero right back home, and hey, you're, you know, Gustavo is in Microsoft. Hey, you know, señor Castro, you must be so proud of your muchachito, so, you know, all this stuff.
My
right?
teachers would tell their kids, if you do your work correctly, you're going to be like Gustavo. You're going
to
make
it. Oh, man, that's it. So I want you to take me from you deciding, like, helping your wife in the weekends and at night to saying, like, I'm going to move into a one bedroom apartment. I'm going to, like, give it 6 months. Your wife was all on board. But did you tell anybody back home? Like, you know, okay. Did you tell your parents? Did your picture come down from the school, you know, whatever, Hall of Fame or whatever it was, right? Well, tell me about that part.
Yeah, man, that's a really good question. That's a really good one. Because, you know, man, I can tell you've kind of, you know, you've done some introspection in your life. So 100% being truthful with you guys in your audience, right? I told my mom when I'd already put in my resignation to Microsoft. That's it, man. That's how I was able to deal with the backlash and the potential. Because I knew what she was, if I were to ask her opinion, which I should do, I knew what she was going to say. It's my mom, right? Like, hell, she wants the best for me, doesn't want me to suffer, doesn't want me to do risky things, right? Yeah. Both my parents were university professors in Mexico. They were teachers, right? I mean, they had the same job essentially for 30 years and had the pension and everything, right? So they're like, what are you doing? What are you doing? So in a sense, Microsoft was like the mothership. It was like, hey, work at Microsoft for 30 years, retire, have your, not a pension, but, you know, 401k, and you're good, man. You're set. What are you doing? Right. Yeah. So I didn't ask Javier. I knew what the answer was. I decided not to ask. And when I told them this is it, they were like kind of a little bit of shock. It's just like, well, you know, whatever makes you happy. That was it. That end of discussion. It was the end of the discussion. Yeah. And there's more to it because, and that's it. This is a really important thing. And this is like a really important event in my life that also influenced this decision. My mom, this was a summer of 2013. November of 2012, like 6-7 months before this, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, right? Not early onset, but 65 years old. Like, damn it, right? Yeah. So sorry that, and I had seen my grandmother had just died of that disease like a few months earlier, after like 15 years with it, right? So for me, kind of knowing what was going to happen to my mom seeing what was going to happen to her 10 years earlier, because my grandmother had it older, it was like, it was a tragedy, man. It was tragic. It was like horrible, right? And but you know, again, everything, all the challenges you have in life, bro, you can have them sink you or you can try and get something out of it. And for me, that tragedy that happened to my mom was like, bro, there's people that wait until they're 65 to do what they want to do, right? Yeah. That was my mom's plan. Wait until you're 65, retire, and you're good to go. Well, what if you don't have until you're 65, right? What if today is the day you have to do what you want to do and roll the dice and see what the fuck happens? I don't know if you can, I don't have to bleep that or not.
But you curse, you do whatever you want. It's the naked truth. Nobody's got naked. Yeah. Nobody's got naked, seriously, but I'm ready for somebody to get naked on the naked truth.
Well, here's me bearing my soul. Not okay, all right, that's close enough. To tell you guys the honest truth of it was I reflected and I said, bro, I have nothing to lose. If those are the stakes, when I'm 65, my life might be over anyway, I might have some bad genes and I'm done, but you play the hand you're dealt, right? At the end of the day, the only thing you can do is make your own decisions, right? The time that you have, what are you going to do? Did you do what the high school teachers wanted you to do? The fans, the family that's rooting for you, or did you do what you wanted to do? Did you do what you wanted to do? And can you make peace with that? Can you make peace with that, right?
So you made peace with that. You told your mom. You didn't tell anybody else. You moved into the one bedroom. Tell me what happened after that.
Yeah. So here's the funny thing, man. Again, this is the Naked Truth podcast, right? So guys, you know, there's a reason people start young when they're entrepreneurs. There's a lot, you know, you're going to make a lot of dumb mistakes. The dumb mistakes people make when they're 20, I made when I was 30 and a wife to support, right? So cash management, spending on dumb stuff, buying stupid marketing that I didn't need, not knowing how to convert those. I was buying these leads, had no idea how to convert them. I made all of those mistakes. So it took me about a year to almost run the business into the ground. Like my bank account hit zero like a year and a half later. I hit zero. I had 10 pending listings, by the way, 10 deals in the pipeline, but I ran out of money, Javier. I could have literally just died right there. I had some savings, I had some money. I had resources. I'm not gonna lie. But the money for the business that I put in from the beginning, the summer of 2013, October, November of 2014, I was insolvent with 10 deals in the pipeline, with I think we were a team of 3 or 4 people at the point. I had effectively run the business into the ground because I made every mistake you can imagine. Cash flow management, budgeting, hiring people, hiring the wrong people, spending too much money. You're making a ton of money, but if you spend more money than you're making, you know, from my very first year in real estate, I sold 30 transactions my first year. And I always floated in that number for the next, I think, 3 years. 10 million in volume. It's massive. It's huge. Unless you're spending more than that, bro. It doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter. So those were lessons that I learned the hard way. I can't really think of another way to learn those lessons effectively. And other entrepreneurs I've talked to, they have some version of that. Like, man, I was like, didn't know what the F I was doing. And I either ran a business into the ground, which is honestly a great learning experience, where I almost died in this business. I had to lay everybody off and just, you know, declare bankruptcy. So I'm here to tell you guys, just being honest with you, that's going to happen as an entrepreneur. That or your version of that, right? You're going to see failure in the face. It's going to stay. You're going to stare into it and go, there's no one to blame but me, right? I'm responsible for this. How did I get myself in this situation? How do I dig out of this hole? How, right? How?
Yep.
And man, the best decisions I've ever made as an entrepreneur is when I'm staring failure in the face. My back is against the wall. I got to make payroll. I got to make expenses. I got to pay the mortgage. I didn't have a mortgage at that point, but I mean, you know what I mean, right? You got to make it happen. And my back's against the wall. I've made the adjustments I need to make. And it's been, you know, what is it, 8 years now? And I'm still running strong, man. And I'm smarter, stronger, richer for it.
All right. So tell me, so you went ahead and almost ran to the ground. So what happened? What got it back up? You got some of those listings to close or what happened there? What was kind of the
listings closed. I got up my budget and I slashed expenses. I didn't cut them. I slashed them. I negotiated late payments with some of these vendors. I go, bro, I don't have any money, bro. I've got money coming in January. Can I pay you in January? Most people will take that call and negotiate something with you. I had never done that in my life, by the way. Call someone I owed money to and said, I don't have any money to pay you right now. I'm going to be late on this month's payment. I'm going to be late on next month's payment. But I've got some deals in the pipeline and I can make a payment starting in January. And by the way, we should renegotiate those terms because otherwise I'm going under, bro. I need your help. That was a few of those calls.
Yeah, right. You basically tell them, hey, look, I either renegotiate with you or I got to call the next person to owe money. I'll negotiate with them.
Yeah.
Somebody exactly, will negotiate. Right? So you want to negotiate or not,
and,
right?
And I was surprised by people's receptiveness to that, right?
Yeah, I mean, people all you got to do is give them a call, right? Like, you know, like
you gotta ask.
In their mind, they're never going to get paid, right? So they say, okay, I'll give you 90 days, Gus. I'll give you 90 days, Javier. You know, if you owe me $100 and I get 30, man, well, hopefully I get 100, but at least I got 30. You know,
yeah,
it's still going to happen, right?
And people you've built relationships with, I mean, if you have a history of like doing things the right way, they're going to be way more open.
If you come through in the past, you say, hey, man, I need 90 days and they'll be all right.
Yeah, exactly. More people than you think are willing to do that. Obviously, the smaller the company is, the more leeway they have for those kind of negotiations. Yeah. But there's always a chance to do that, guys. But you got to ask. And for me, it was humiliating to ask, man. It's like, oh man, I can't pay my bills. What do I do? Well, you get on the phone and you figure it out, right? And make things happen.
You were able to close the stuff. You come back. You slashed some expenses. So where did the ISA, the inside sales agent company, come across? Like, how did that happen?
One of the things I decided to do after like having this near-death experience, and I was spending money on Zillow, spending money on smart targeting, was doing all these things, man, but I wasn't converting these leads. I was buying all this stuff, and the deals that I was making were still coming out of the regular ways I always made them, which was networking, connections, calling around my listings, prospecting around my listings myself. I heard about this model. I go, hey, this is interesting. Let me try this out. Let's see what happens. And I liked it because it was much more scalable than signing a 12-month contract with Zillow or a 12-month contract with the smart targeting, anything like that. I said, let me try this out because I can try this for 90 days and see what happens, right? See what happens, give it a shot. And the ISA, who wasn't the first guy? I went through an interview process. I talked to a lot of people. I got a couple guys in. One of them actually stuck around in my office in Seattle, and he made calls. And within 30 days, I was training him, right? I had not done prospecting there. I learned all this prospecting stuff. I read all the scripts. I had a coach, right? A really good coach at Keller Williams. Got to, you know, hand it out to that guy. Tim Heil, who's like a legend in the Keller Williams world. He was still doing coaching back then. And I talked to him one-on-one. He helped me out. And this guy I trained up, and he did 22 listing appointments in 1 month. And I was able to train him up to that level. From doing zero real estate to doing 22 listing appointments in 1 month, right? And I was like, holy cow, this is something really, really interesting, right? And everyone learns about that. People hear that and people are interested in that. Like, hey, what? So that was really, really like a big change, a big thing. And that didn't happen until 2015. And I said, okay, this is really interesting. I had this guy calling the leads that I had, outbound prospecting, cold calling, everything they could do to generate business for me, right? So one of the things I thought was, I bet I could build a team like this, ISA, in Mexico. I bet I could, right? Because that's where I was from. That's where I could find people. And I could hire more people. I could have them call more lists and more areas. And let's make this happen. And again, once you start talking about a project and you put it out there in the world, this is 100% true. 4 people from my brokerage told me, Gus, if you're going to go build like a team in Mexico, can you hire and train a guy for me, right? Can you do that for me? And here's some money. So 4 people gave me $10,000. Sight unseen, Javier. I had not been to Mexico yet. I had never built a call center. I had trained people in the US, but again, people were saying, oh, if you can do it here, you can do it there, right? Yep. So make it happen for me. Here's some money, by the way. I had never had clients coming to me and giving me money before the fact. Ever in real estate. In real estate, you gotta hunt. You gotta chase those leads. You gotta really hustle. And here I had people like literally one of the four called me and said, hey man, I haven't seen you in the office. I've been looking for you. When are you gonna take my money? Like, it was upset that I had not taken his call, right? Because I was busy. I'm like, F man, what am I gonna do? Okay, great. Yeah, sure. Set wired over, and you know, let's make it happen. So I tapped into a need, right? I was, again, kind of an ignorant entrepreneur, but I was smart enough to know I tapped into like something the market desperately needed, which was help in building these calling teams, right? They needed some help. So I went down to Mexico. This is a summer of 2015, and I started my first team there. It was 4 guys in a room, some laptops, and let's go. That was how I got introduced into the ISA model.
Cool. So then you went out there, you started up your with four people. So tell me what it looks like now.
Right now I have 120 people. That was four people in a room. And actually, this was my hometown in TJ. Yep. Now, then I moved the call center further south into the country, to more like a virgin area where there were just less call centers and a lot of English speaking people. And I built up first a team of about 30 people. Yep. And then it became a team of 50 people. And it was about 50 people when the pandemic hit. Well, fast forward to now, we're 120 people, right? Because this whole virtual, working and virtual calling and everything is now the norm. It used to be kind of weird a year ago. Now, like, everyone's doing it, right? Or have tried, at least tried it, and the fear is gone of doing that, right? So
yeah, I remember before COVID, like, hey, I work from home. It was like, all right, that's cool. Like, people work from home, like, not big deal, right? And now it's like, I'm going to work. Like, you're actually driving to work? That's weird now. Like, you're actually driving to work. That's kind of weird. Right?
Exactly.
It just changed. So that's good, because it's good for, it's good for people that want to stay home, right? Maybe they got smaller kids. Maybe they send off the kids to school and the kids come home and they're still home. It's pretty good. I mean, especially if it's something you can do virtually on a computer. You can do it from an office, or you can do it from a beach. You can do it from your house, right?
Yeah. 100%, man. 100%. Yeah. All of those advantages, right? You're safe from COVID. If you're in an area that, this was during the whole year. I mean, at some points, even in Mexico and the US, the disease was raging, right? People were scared to go out, right? Scared to go into the bus, to get into, a taxi, like, oh, holy cow. Working from home is a great option, right? And there's still some benefits to doing that. People are like, man, I don't need to commute and make some money. Holy cow.
Save yourself 10 hours a week of driving time too, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. And I had, we had a call center, a physical call center with almost 50 people in it. And we were like 2 months in, and they're saying, God, people were messaging me saying, because it was temporary measure initially. It was a temporary thing. We had to close down in April. We were going to come back in June or July. And people were messaging me, Gus, if you're considering making this permanent, bro, make it permanent, because I sleep 2 hours more a day, right? Guys were like, it's like, I save a ton of money on food because I'm eating at home. I am way healthier because I'm not spending, eating all this garbage out in the street. Because again, these are young guys, young girls.
Yeah, you're in Mexico, man. I love it, man. You walk outside, there's tacos everywhere. There's free. There's
Exactly.
I love it.
There's everywhere, just down in the coast, left and right. And people are like, man, I'm happier, I'm healthier, and have more time to myself. This is like getting a raise, bro. One of the guys, you had to push my button. Like, bro, it's like getting a raise. It's like, man, this is amazing. Please do not make this go back, right? Wow. Several people kind of said that. And I said, well, if this is for real, right? Well, let's see what happens. And then I had a big meeting with the people. And it was like, I think 90% of people said, this is awesome. This is the best thing. When we went permanently virtual, about 10% of the company said, this is just not for me, bro. They just didn't accept it, didn't like it, didn't want it. And I get it. But we changed, right? We changed, we adapted, we shifted. And man, that change saved the company. I didn't know it at the time, but that shift to making 100% virtual, we would have been shut down so many times if that wouldn't happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for sure. Open up, re-shut down, open up, shut down, and just, you would have lost your flows. Yeah. All right. So tell me, you do calls for, you said for mortgage brokers.
Yeah. Real estate agents. Yeah. Mortgage brokers investors.
So tell me what you provide. What do you do for investors? What does that look like?
Yeah, definitely. So for investors,
single family, I'm assuming single family.
It's single family and small multi. That's really our sweet spot with the prospecting. And we're starting a couple of commercial, like larger multifamily campaigns. I don't have results from that yet, so I can't tell you we're awesome at it. But residential, condo and small multifamily is a sweet spot that we've seen with prospecting, because there's a lot of owner operators in that range, right? A lot of smaller investors, and those are always the easiest to talk to and to connect with, right? So that is, and one of the things I always tell investors, that they have a huge advantage over real estate agents and loan officers. And it comes down to one thing. The investors, the smart ones, they know the value of a good list. They know how important building a list is. And they put their money where their mouth is when they're list building, right? They, because an agent will prospect the whole neighborhood, like the phone book. Let's just call everybody. Let's see who's willing to buy or sell, because their criteria is really, really low. Do you want to buy or do you want to sell? That's it, right? So they don't see a ton of value in these lists, right? They really don't. But the investor knows that they're going to live or die by that list. Their criteria is not anyone that wants to buy or wants to sell. No, man. They have a really specific criteria they need to meet. They need to have motivation. They need to qualify the seller. They need to qualify the property too, not just the seller, the property too. And the numbers all have to make sense. So the list that we call with investors versus the list that we call with other kinds of clients, the quality is way, way, way higher on the investor side, man. The quality is better.
Do you pull those lists for them, or they all bring your list? So let's just say, let's just say I decided to. How do I want to say this? Okay, now let's do it this way. Let's just say I decided to.
You want to call Gus and hey, let's get started, Gus.
Yeah, let's say, hey man, Gus, I decided to go from buying apartments. Now I want to buy single family houses. Yeah. Right. And I'm having a midlife crisis. No, I'm just kidding, guys. No, I'm just kidding. Because I guess what's going to happen? I'm going to end up buying houses in a year from now. You'd be like, oh my gosh, Javier said he'd never buy a house and now he's buying houses. So anyways, it's just an example, right? Entertainment purposes. So I would say, hey Gus, I'm buying some houses. What do I do? What's my next step?
Yeah. So, I mean, for us, we do not build the list for you. So I want to be super, you know, honest with folks. We don't do list building. We're not skip tracers. That's not our expertise. That's not our superpower. You do have to bring the list with you. And there's all these, that's why you're around, Javier. That's why you guys do the training and the education, and you guys have great trainings on how to do this, how to do this exact same spot, because that's the key to the business, right? If you have a good list, you know, you can be successful, right? If you have an awful list, you can have the best marketing, the best ISA, the best everything. You're not going to be successful. The numbers are just not going to make sense, right? So it starts with the list. And I'm going to be honest. You're layering different kinds of marketing. The mailers, the text messages, the phone calls. You got to call, guys. Yeah. Knocking on the door, driving by. All of these things, you got to put them in conjunction. But I'm always surprised the amount of people that don't pick up the phone and call them. I'm like, man, you should call these people every day. The guys who don't pick up, calling every week, right? Like, holy, you got to call them. And you can get a great result by just, one of the best ways to have a two-way conversation with someone is just calling them, right? Yes, it's awesome when they come and reach out to you. That's the best. I'm not going to say no. When they reach out to you, of course, that's the best lead. But getting on the phone, making that call, and just seeing what they're about is another great way to do it. And that's what our most successful, you know, folks have been. And we have campaigns, not like in, you know, Topeka, you know, Kansas, like Austin, Texas, Dallas, I mean, these really hot markets, like super hot markets, calling still works in those markets, right? You know, absolutely. I think Austin is probably one of the hottest, you know, at least for residential, is one of the hottest markets in the whole U.S., right?
Oh, for sure.
And investors, it's so hot that the investors can compete with the retail buyers because the investors can flip them for so much more money.
Yeah.
Because they're doing add-on, value add, whatever.
So I say, hey guys, I'm going to buy some houses. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm going to buy some houses in Raleigh, North Carolina. Here's my list. And then is there like a commitment for me, 3 months, 6 months? So what's the commitment?
Oh, we can do month to month if you want, right? Wow, cool. I mean, that's have month to month options because some folks are very, very conservative. They go, you know what? I'm not sure. I've never tried calling before. I need to see what we can do. And we have month to month commitments. I do tell folks that if you're expecting to close a bunch of deals in the first month, that's just not realistic, right? And you want to get follow-up. Yeah, you got to have good conversations and appointments. That's a realistic expectation within the first month, but you're not going to close a bunch of deals.
And right now you're doing a lot of physical appointments, or most of your appointments are like virtual or a little bit of both?
For the investors, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. It just depends on the area you're in. Texas, they'll still go to your house and meet you. Texas doesn't care, right? Other areas, it's a little bit tougher, right? But it kind of depends, whatever the client prefers. But last summer, everything was virtual. We were setting, I think, 200 appointments, almost at the peak of COVID, when everyone was home, hence everyone was near their phone, right? You could pick up the phone. We were setting 200 appointments a day, Javier.
Wow.
200, virtual. Virtual made it easier to say yes. And everybody was home. 200 appointments a day. This is, again, retail and investors and everything all come together. Yeah. But it was insanity, man. It was crazy, crazy, crazy. But yeah, virtual makes it easier to do. Virtual makes it so much more efficient. If you can find a way to do all your appointments virtual, you can have 20 appointments in a day. You can. It's doable because I've seen it, you know, done. Again, word for the wise, right? Try it out. Try virtual. It can definitely be a good one.
Yeah, everything we do is virtual.
There's a lot of people that want to do it.
Yeah, we haven't had a physical like appointment to go look at something, and I guess in a couple of years, like we haven't.
Ahead of that curve.
Yeah, unless it's, you know, once it's under contract, then we'll go look at it, right? But gotcha. Yeah, we haven't physically gone to look at any property unless we've already accepted the terms, right? We're under contract for sure.
That's smart. That's a smart thing.
But so you guys just schedule the appointments? Do you guys, the sales agent gets them on the phone and they transfer over to like a closer, or is just setting up an appointment, or depends?
So we have this really depends on the client, right? Because some of our clients are still, it's the owner operator. do closing the deals, right? Yeah. So typically the ISAs hand off an appointment. They hand off a qualified opportunity to the closer. The closer might be the owner of that, might be the investor themselves, got a small team. Or we have teams that are like 12, 15 people that they hand them off to the acquisitions manager or the acquisition closer, right? They hand off to the person who's going to close, attend the appointment. And they do an additional qualification, make sure they didn't mess up, make sure double check all the numbers. Okay, we're good to go. Or they can go, you know what? I know that zip code. Yeah, I've been to that house before. I mean, there might be a lot of the reasons. The closure always qualifies, you know, the appointment at the end of the day, decides where they want to go or not. But the ISA's job is to like bust the phone, boom, 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 making those calls so that the closer is only evaluating, okay, I've got, you know, five potential people I can talk to today. Which ones make the most sense? Which ones don't make any sense? And they can prioritize what they're going to do that day.
Yeah, cool. So then what would it be like somebody's budget, right? Like say somebody who just starting out and they got a list, you know, maybe they got 1,000 numbers and maybe they want a caller or a part-time caller. Like what kind of budget are they going to need? I mean, what would you say?
Yeah, so we have part-time callers available. One thing I do tell folks, and this is super important too, is that for investors, it's a little bit different because they have calling lists and we can calculate really, really easily how much time do they need someone to call that list. If it's only 1,000 numbers, I always ask them, they only have one list of 1,000 numbers. That's not a lot. Maybe they don't need a dedicated ISA. They don't need to hire someone like 1,000 numbers. I mean, it's borderline between you should call it yourself or you should hire someone to call it for you. If you're going to be generating one or two of those lists a month consistently, some of our clients work multiple markets, right? If you're in North Carolina, might be doing Raleigh, Charlotte, Asheville, I don't know, anywhere other, yeah, you're doing usually doing more than one market. And we have folks up in the Northeast, they're doing several states, right? They do Massachusetts, Connecticut, right? I mean, they got, you know, different areas to do, right? Smaller towns in Massachusetts and New York and Connecticut, whatever they can do. It's their area of expertise. So they'll do multiple. So you got to make sure you're going to have a consistent flow of numbers, because that ISA can bust out 100, 150, 200 calls a day, right? 100 to 200 calls a day, because you don't want to put these lists on an automatic dialer. So let me say that again, right? You don't want to put these lists on an automatic dialer because one, it might not be legal in the area you're calling. That's number one. Number two, you're always going to have drop calls with those automatic dialers. You've got to be really careful how you call those, because a drop call on a crappy residential list, you lost $5. Probably wasn't going to be useful anyway. A drop call on a super filtered, high equity, you know, notice of default, sweet spot list is a $20,000 you just lost if you didn't take that call. You know what I'm saying? So dial as slow as possible, but even slow is 100 to 200 a day is what I mean. I won't accept less than 100 calls a day from an ISA, even if they're doing, you know, calling on a single line dialer. It's 100 calls minimum to make it happen.
So, super cool. Yeah. Right. So what do you have? How can people get a hold of you? You got a Facebook group. You got some free content out there. What do you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, you can always check out the content we put out on our free Facebook group. You know, it's usually me talking to an expert like Javier here, or someone, you know, in real estate and marketing and prospecting. We're always sharing content, doing interviews. You can join that group. You know, you can share the link with your audience there, Javier. And you can just check us out at powerisa.com. That's our company, powerisaaltogether.com. Or you can search Power ISA on Facebook. I'm really active on Facebook. That is the best place to find me. Not really LinkedIn, not really Instagram. I'm not huge on those. Facebook, you can find me pretty much any day. So I'd love to continue the conversation and answer anybody's questions.
Cool. Gus, I appreciate being on the show. But before you go, I'm actually going to do the roulette where I'm going to ask you the naked truth roulette. I'm just going to ask you three random questions. And this is always the favorite part of the show for me. Naked Truth Roulette. Here we go with Gus Castro. Let's go ahead and start rolling this sucker. Let's see what we get. I wish the first one was, let's see.
Big money, big money, big money.
Let's see. Here we got. First question for Gus is, what is your most used curse word?
Oh, man. It has to be in Spanish. I curse way more in Spanish than I do in English. In English, I'm more of a pro, man. I only dropped one F-bomb in the podcast. But in Spanish, it's chingado, okay. Which is like, right. I don't know, like damn it, like just screw, like I don't know.
It's that's good. That's a good one. Like damn it, or
yeah, like damn it, right? It sounds worse in Spanish, doesn't it?
It does, man. It does. You can curse worse in Spanish, and you can say nicer love words in Spanish.
It's more extreme, right? Yeah. Five ways to say you love someone. You've got 18 ways to say you don't like someone. So I love
it. Yeah. For sure. All right. Question number two for Gus here on the Naked Truth Roulette. It's rolling here. It's about to stop. Let's see what we got. All right. We're going to have favorite food. All right. What's your favorite food?
Oh, Mexican, man. This is not even close. Mexican, some good tacos. But I'm talking about where I'm from, like the north, west of Mexico, like TJ, Sonora, Baja California, that area, the northwest tacos. I'm a taco Nazi, right? I'm like, I'm picky about my tacos. Those are the best tacos. Anyone thinking of like going anywhere? That's why Southern California has the best tacos, because of that area of Mexico, yeah, man. FYI.
For sure. Yeah, definitely love me some Southern California and TJ tacos for sure.
Oh, man. Good stuff. Good stuff.
All right, cool. Third question for Gus. All right, what's your favorite band, song, or artist?
Oh, man, that's a really good one. So, okay, this is a random, little bit of out of left field, but when I was younger, I played the trumpet in a mariachi band. So I love mariachi music, right?
All right, cool.
And in,
cool.
In Mexico, there's this one like iconic mariachi band, Mariachi Vargas, which is like, you know, it's like old school, super famous. They're probably, I went to see them in Seattle. Love those guys, by the way. Can't wait till they start touring again because I love hearing them. Vargas, man. Mariachi, 100%.
Mariachi Vargas. You're the first person that said mariachi on the podcast.
There we go, awesome. Man. Nailed it. Nailed it.
Gus, you survived the Naked Truth Roulette.
There you go. Hey, I got the sound.
All right, got me some sounds in here. So, Gus, I appreciate you being on the show. You know, today we talked about your kind of your career with Microsoft, how you're a local hero, celebrity, because you had made it big in Mexico and you went to work for Microsoft, and after 10 years or so, you're like, hey man, this, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to quit, start my job. You told your mom, you didn't tell anybody else. You were pretty much broke, ran out of money, and just kind of just fell into the ISA, like the call center business. And you have 120 callers right now at the peak of COVID. You guys were doing like 200 appointments a day. That is insane. That's really, really good. And you took answered two questions, Naked Roulette. That is awesome. And for anybody out there who's looking to get an ISA, is there a part-time? Your side hustle is real estate. You know, the best thing you can do is actually have somebody calling for you, right? It's always the best thing, you know, kind of outsource that task. And guys, reach out to Gus. It's not as expensive, or the investment is not as much as you think it is, right? Don't think about it like, hey, this is going to cost you money. It's just an investment and it's going to have its ROI, right? So, you know, while you're at work or whatever it is, right? Just do it. Trust me, it definitely works. I've been cold calling for, I don't know, 5 years now. So it definitely works. Gus also has some free content out there. He's got a Facebook group, and or go to powerisa.com is the website. So Gus, anything else you'd like to share before we go?
Oh, that's it, man. Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much.
Cool, man. Thank you so much. This is Javier, your host, and don't lose your shirt. Just as promised, I like to give out free stuff, some tools and tips that's actually helped me in my business. There's nothing out there like getting some free stuff that people have spent a lot of time, energy in putting together. It's like a referral. Somebody asked me for an electrician. You don't know what kind of brain damage I had to go through to give you this good referral for an electrician. You got to appreciate referrals from people, okay? Because they went through a lot to find that one good person. So I'm going to give you my due diligence template for buying apartment buildings. It's attached to monday.com. It is an affiliate link, so they're going to send me a kickback. Not a lot, but a little bit. But you can either download it as an Excel, or you can put it on monday.com. Monday.com is pretty cool because it's a project management platform software. It's super cool. I use it all the time for my social media, for my team, tracking deals, doing tasks for everybody. It's actually pretty good. You can track construction. It's a project management platform. It's really cool. Monday, like the day, monday.com. So my due diligence checklist is there for free for you.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.